Podcast sandwich episode -1.
Yeah, the appetizer.
All right, so obviously we should introduce ourselves. My name is Richard Perez.
And I'm Joseph Mason.
All right, well, so what this started as is kind of like
a really stupid idea.
Not just that, but something that I think you and I have, I don't know about a gift or a talent, but we have like a weird knack of being able to tell stories and make not just ourselves, each other laugh, but making our friends laugh in this
foil
way.
Foil off of each other pretty well.
We do. We're a good foil. That's a good way of putting it. You know, we give, and take and give, and it just goes back and forth. So that's our friend Brad in the background. So JD, I understand you did a lot. This is your brainchild. I'm only the, I'm just the working man behind this.
I was actually driving home when I thought, and this was after, what was the original idea? It was like Divine Bovine or something like that.
Oh yeah, so the original name for this was going to be Divine Bovine, just because it rhymed, it sounded cool, and you know, you wanted to name it after Holy Cow, the restaurant joint, the restaurant place up in Austin.
But then I got to thinking, I got to work at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was just delirious, and I was like, "What was our logo going to be?" Because I couldn't think of anything that wouldn't be just kind of dumb,
clip art kind of
thing.
Yeah,
and then I was like, "Wait a second." Podcast sandwich sounds really stupid in the greatest kind of way.
It does. It sounds like, you mentioned it before, it sounds like, you know, you got your BLT sandwich, chicken sandwich, you've got your Italian club sandwich, you've got all different kinds of sandwich, and what is this?
Sandwich.
Podcast sandwich. So, you know.
It's the tastiest kind of sandwich.
We're just the buns, and we're putting in the filling right now.
Yeah, I'm plenty of filling by myself.
So, going back to you doing a lot of homework into this, you've got a lot of topics, you got some stuff to talk about, talking points. To lay down the sort of a foundation of how this podcast is going to be formatted, there's not really much of a formatting. So when we have a topic or a question, the person answering it, or the person who asks the question, must also answer their own question, but after the person answers the question.
I also had a neat idea. I was going to write some, just some topics down. One I really wanted to talk about was the Great Emu War. That just still baffles the hell out of me every time I think about it.
So, just off the wall kind of subjects.
Yeah,
like
I was going to think right now, I was going to cut them up. I was going to put them in like a little, like, bucket or something. Just draw them at random.
Which would be cool. That would add like a sort of, you know, a random element to this podcast. Which I think, eliminates stagnation. Yeah. So, and it, not just that, you, the viewers, the listeners, could also submit topics and questions and other stuff you would like for us to discuss.
That'd be cool.
See, that would be cool. So, do you have your first, let's get this thing going.
A topic?
Yeah, whatever you want.
I've been thinking about, I think about Tommy Wiseau probably more often than I should.
Well, it doesn't help that we've seen the Disaster Artist recently.
That made it worse.
Yeah, it really did exacerbate. Because prior to maybe 2011, I hadn't seen The Room. I'd heard that Micro Jupiter remix that I showed you a while back, which the link will be in the description below, or it will be in the link dump. So, it was just a remix of a couple of the notable lines. Like, I did not hit her. How could you do this to me? Everyone betrayed me. I'm fed up with this world. And so, that was a terrible Tommy Wiseau impersonation.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like the main chorus and hook of the song, which really hooked me. Which, it was a good song. It was by Micro Jupiter. No idea what they've done since or what they did before. Funny story. I actually heard that song on what was this podcast called Talk Radar way back in the day. The Games Radar website had their own podcast with Charlie Berry, Chris Antista, and a couple other guys who I'm sure have gone, you know, I know Chris Antista is still working in video games, but I couldn't tell you anything about those guys. But they linked that song on an interlude of their podcast, and that's what made me go look up that song. And that kind of started the ripple effects of going to of the Tommy Wiseau. That was my foray into Tommy Wiseau.
Mine was, I watched The Nostalgia Critic, and I think it must have been, I can't remember when, it must have been more than a year ago. I saw it was a 20-minute long review of The Room, and he just goes on a tirade about it, but at the very end he's like, should you see this movie? Absolutely you should see this movie, and here's why. Nothing this bad could happen by accident.
Exactly, it's like,
stylistic suck at its finest. And that word stylistic suck just stuck with me. I think like that's the perfect way to describe it.
That's a good way of describing it. I don't think I've ever heard stylistic suck before.
Yeah, it's
that's something that's got to be utilized in my lexicon right now. What kind of? It's just a stylistic suck, man. So going back to it, I think a critic called it the Citizen Kane of suck or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like the anti-Citizen Kane going back to that post. But I saw The Room maybe like 2012. I was at my buddy Adam's house and I saw it on just like YouTube randomly. And I thought, man, this movie sucks. This movie was terrible. I had no clue about movies. I knew I wanted to go to school for movies. I wanted to be in film, radio, television, something like that. And I didn't have too much of an understanding of how a film would work or how, you know, the technical aspects of a movie. And I just knew that movie was terrible. I knew that movie was darn right terrible. Like, you don't have to be a five-star chef to know when food sucks.
Yeah, but this was like I said, when you go back to stylistic suck, it was so bad that it was... You can't see in any way that this could have been unintentional. Like, remember the scene when they went into the florist shop? Everything's out of whack.
Yeah.
Hi, doggy. You know, it's just like...
It's so... And then he takes off his glasses. Oh, hi, Tommy. I didn't realize I was here. I didn't recognize you.
All the lip syncs all out of whack.
That had to have been re-recorded. There had to have been... Maybe Tommy Wiseau was too cheap or too prideful to do a pickup. And he's just like, we'll just dub over this.
What was the budget on this movie again?
I don't think that was ever disclosed because that was all Tommy's personal stuff.
I can look that up.
Let's look that up. In the meantime... Watching Going to the Disaster Artist, whether that was fictionalized, whether that was exacerbated, dramatized, whatever you want to say, I think it was a nice little introspective.
It was great.
It was a good biopic of that movie in general. I loved The Disaster Artist. I didn't know what to expect going into it. All I knew was just, I thought it was going to be more... Well, let's talk about going into the movie, because you and I saw it together, what, once or twice? How many times did we see it?
Twice, I believe. But before we go into that, it had a budget of $6 million, which isn't that much
but
at all.
Considering the time and considering it was all from Tommy.
Well, considering what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was all done, all the credits were Tommy Wiseau. Tommy Wiseau pictures showed up twice in the intro.
Going into the movie, I thought it was going to be more of like a...
More like straight up comedy
kind of a thing. No. Kind of like, more like a documentary.
Really?
It felt like more of a dramatization than it. It had some great comedy spots in it. Like, I didn't know throughout the movie, I didn't know whether to feel like serious as if it was supposed to be a drama or a comedy, because Seth Rogen being in it with his best friend James Franco in that movie, anytime those two dudes are in a movie, you know it's going to be a riot of a time.
Anytime the Tommy Wiseau character was on screen, you didn't know what the hell he was going to do.
Exactly.
That was the greatest part about it. He's like, all right, what's he going to... And you didn't know whether or not you wanted to hate him, or you wanted to feel bad for him, or you liked him. He was like all over the place. Sometimes he was just a genuine asshole.
He was. He genuinely was. What made me most... Well, I'm not going to go into that part just yet. But like going... when he was on screen, you know, I want to believe a lot of this is true, but I'm sure some of it's just a work of fiction.
Yeah.
But when he was picking up... I don't even remember the guy, the Mark, oh, was it Mark? Was Mark his actual real name?
I don't think Mark was his real name. I can't remember the actor's name.
But anyway, his name, when he was picking him up to move out to Los Angeles, he was like, how, and the mom asked, how old are you? He goes, same as you.
He kept that up throughout the entire movie,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like, I'm from New Orleans. And so, it's just, and then going back to him, he going to being a real jerk, he was like, When he made him shave his beard when he was offered that role in Malcolm in the Middle by Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
That, I was like, dude, he's going to be in Malcolm in the Middle. I was totally in for the ride with this movie. I was like, oh my God, I want to go and see what role he's going to play in Malcolm in the Middle. I wonder if I could go watch this episode. But it never came through.
And that scene where, I kind of forgot the specifics, but it was having to do where Tommy was like just going hard on that woman because she didn't look right and she wouldn't wear makeup in the right place.
Yeah, and during the sex scene.
Yeah, it was so... It made me uncomfortable in a good way, but very uncomfortable.
But it just, that's the thing about, you know, like, on, like, oh, it's movie 101. It just provoked that feeling out of you, which is obviously the goal. Which is it's the goal of that scene, but you just felt terrible for that actress, you know? Like, as part of me... like I said, I'm sounding like a broken record. Part of me wants to believe that was all true, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, normally if that was anyone else but Tommy was so, it would be a lot harder to believe it was all true. But because Tommy Wiseau is who he is, it is a lot more believable because you can believe that he would do something.
Absolutely. Along, like, absolutely.
That bottom, that scene where in the bank and they're like, well, this actually went through. It's like, yeah, this is like a bottomless account.
Yeah, that scene. And it's like, where did he get his money from? And what's interesting to me, what kind of like throws a wrench in the gears in my brain is like, a lot of the loose ends in that movie are loose ends in real life.
Yeah.
Like, nobody truly knows where he's from. Nobody truly knows where he got the money from.
I think they did figure out where he was from.
Well, it was said that he confirmed that he's not from the United States, but yeah. He never gave a solid answer to where he's from. He's like, oh yeah, I'm not from New Orleans. But I mean, it's just so crazy. Like, when will we find out about this?
Yeah.
It's
the ending scene.
Yeah, like, where's...
In the theater.
Like, technically... This movie's still going, because if
I guess it is.
Because I mean, like, what's one of my favorite? I think it was the Golden Globes. It was when James Franco won. Was it Best Actor?
Yeah.
When he won the award, and then he invited Tommy Wiseau up to on stage. Like, that's when you know, like, oh my god, what is going on? This lunatic is inviting Tommy Wiseau up on stage, and then he grabs him. I don't know if he was playing or if he wanted to make a speech, but when he reached for the microphone to say something, and Tommy Wiseau and James Franco cut him off, like, oh dude, a part of me wishes he would have let Tommy Wiseau go.
Oh dude, Kanye West would have had nothing on Tommy Wiseau.
No, he wouldn't have. But you know, Tommy Wiseau would have gone on forever with that.
Oh no, they would have never gotten that mic back.
No, they would have.
They would have had to shut it down, open it another building.
They just have to kill the mic to dim the lights. Like, all right, we're moving on.
So on a different note, and I mean, if you don't want to go on to another movie,
no, let's go on to. I think I know where you're going.
One that has a very different tone.
We'll say it together. 3, 2, 1. I Tonya. Oh my god.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah, that I don't think I've ever felt so bad walking out of a movie. in recent times.
I will say this is one of those mockumentary films, whether, you know,
it went over different points of view of what could have happened.
Yeah. And it covered a lot of ground, a lot of speculation, it touched a lot of bases without ever saying, this is what happened, this is the truth, you know? And it, like, breaking the fourth wall a lot in that movie, I think really made it better. People, I've seen critics say, never break the fourth wall. Breaking the fourth wall is a big no-no, and you don't want to do that. It's hard to recover from that. And it generally overall drags down your movie, drags down your narrative.
Yeah.
But
it really worked here. It kind of worked in the same way it worked with Deadpool, almost.
I never saw Deadpool. Oh, but here's going to the plot device of where it would, in the mockumentary style, where they were sitting and doing the interview parts with the characters, what was supposed to be modern times. And when Jeff, I believe that was the husband's name, Jeff Gillooly was his name.
Yeah.
He tells me, oh yeah, she definitely shot at me. And it cuts immediately to the scene where he's running out of the house and here comes Tanya with the 12-gauge pump shotgun. And she's like, this is bullshit. This never happened. And then she shoots it in.
Fantastic.
That was great. And the funny thing is, I think that was in the trailer. So like, they put a lot of that stuff in the trailer and you're like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And that movie was good. And at the very end of the credits, when it rolled its reference, like the reference stuff, what it referenced, or what it used for reference, I should say, where they're interviewing the fat guy who called the hit.
God, that guy was such a piece of shit.
Oh, dude, he...
In the movie, like, there was not a good person in this movie.
No, there wasn't. That's a good point. What I hear a lot is people say, that movie's terrible, you shouldn't go support it, because it's glorifying Tanya Harding and it's making her to sound like she's the bad guy. It's making, it's portraying Tanya in a sympathetic light, which it kind of does. It's fair to say that it does portray her in a sympathetic light, but it doesn't shy away. What makes me feel bad, if we wanted to go discuss this, what makes me feel bad is her upbringing, is the fact that she had, I don't know if you want to say a borderline abusive mom.
Oh, but she shit. Had definitely, that woman was insane.
Yeah. So she had a crazy upbringing. That's the part where I sympathized a lot with her.
And I get you there, but here's where I think the movie was actually trying to make it, you know, trying to point out that, hey, she never, ever takes responsibility for what, you know, she does.
That's a good point.
I don't think you're supposed, like, you can, but I don't think you're supposed to, because at the very end, she goes on this, like, you know, it was your fault.
Yeah, basically, exactly. It was your
fault, and looks right at you.
Hard cam. And then, okay, going back onto that, she says, all of you are my assault victims. And just hard. She's just hitting hard on the camera, breaking that. She's not breaking the fourth wall. She is shattering that thing with a giant sledgehammer, brick by brick, breaking it down, and verbally assaulting, cutting, as my wrestling fans would say, cutting a promo on the audience, on the viewer, right there. She's cutting a massive promo on you, making you to be the bad guy, making everybody who watched every little SNL skit, every Inside Edition coverage, all the Inside Edition coverage, every journalist who was out there on that lawn, every cameraman who was out there just stalking her.
We were watching the damn movie.
Yeah, and everybody who ever made her life miserable. Mind you, it was actress Margot Robbie in that point.
Yeah, but still, if looks could kill, you would have a very interesting news story that morning.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, going back to it, there's parts where it's sympathetic, and that's where a lot of people had their beef with this movie. But as you say, she does take responsibility, or she does dodge responsibility,
That moment that we just talked about, that was like the breaking point, which is about halfway through the movie where I was like, okay, I'm gonna get, she does not take responsibility for anything she does.
I believe the part where we was talking about where she was, when she was tearing up the audience, that was at the end, wasn't it? I want to say that was the end.
It was towards the end.
Yeah, it was very. And very much, it was after. It was either at the trial scene or prior to, or just after. It was definitely after the Olympic scene, the 1994 Olympic scene.
Yeah,
where she got eighth and just like completely lost it. But going further into the movie, when I think it was it was 1992, 1993, where she went to U.S. Nationals and got fourth, and Nancy Kerrigan got like third or second or something like that. And she was just totally upset about everything. And she was like, I can't believe this. Going back to your point, where she said, they screwed up my skate blades. But then it immediately cuts through a montage of her drinking, partying, swilling alcohol, eating terrible, and not training. So that goes back to your point of her shifting blame and shifting responsibility. Which I'd never considered that up until literally just now.
Yeah, I can't remember what point it was, because I was like, I kind of did feel, and I still kind of do, I feel bad that she's that way, so to speak. But yeah. I don't feel bad for what happened. I don't think anything that happened to her should happen to any person, but
no,
I feel bad that she's just that way, and I think her upbringing kind of plays a part in that.
Yeah, she's definitely a victim of her own circumstances, but she doesn't help herself any, she didn't help herself any, I should say.
And with a lot of people, we were trying to help her out.
Yes, especially with her coach, her trainer.
Who had a lot of pride in her.
Initially. Exactly. Yeah. She had put a lot of time and effort into her, and she just straight up fired her. I believe it was like 1992. She just straight up fired her and said, you know what, you're done. Throws your skates at her and says, I'm done. You know, I'm done with you. And she goes and fails. You know, obviously we're kind of like critiquing the past. You know, saying like, I didn't like the fact that she was banned for life from skating, but I mean, that's kind of what you get. The fact that it's kind of still shrouded. Was she involved? Was she not involved? Was she involved? Did she know? Did she not know?
It's kind of all up to speculation.
But yeah, it is. Nobody knows except the people involved, you know? And, you know, it's not our space to say whether she's innocent or whether she was guilty. But, you know, I felt so bad when the judge handed down the permanent ban,
I would say that
figure skating.
Despite what I did say, that
killed me because that was her life. That was everything.
And the boxing scene, that was like, oh god,
yeah.
It was just a human who's been defeated. It's not an easy thing to watch.
No, it wasn't. It was horrid. It was terrible. And going back to the scene, Margot Robbie does an excellent job of conveying the emotion and the heartbreak and the anguish that she had. She's like, send me to prison. Everybody else got 18 months of prison. And I you know, here I am serving basically a life sentence, a lifetime ban from what's been my life since I was like 3 or 4 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. And that it was fictionalized. I've not seen real court video. I have no idea what happened there, but that hit home a lot. And which is kind of like the point of a movie, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. To fictionalize and play it up. But man, that hurt.
And I just make one last point, unless you had something else to go on to this.
Go for it.
Whoever played the Tanya security guard guy, is so hard to play a real, genuine, unlikable piece of shit. And he nailed that role so well.
When he was being interviewed by, when the character was being interviewed, you just kind of like lost it. Because she's like, we've checked. He's like, no, I'm an international counter-terrorist agent. I'm definitely that. And she's like,
but you're not.
But you're not. He's like, but I am.
And he made that face like, of course I am.
Yeah, exactly. And she goes, where's your work done? Where have you been featured? He's like, travel magazine. I believe it was a travel magazine.
And there was like a 12-second delay there.
Yeah, there was just like awkward silence where he knows he'd been got. And he just lets it go. He just punts. Another point to I, Tanya, was she worked hard. There's another scene when she was in the early childhood age where she goes and kills the rabbits to make her own fur coat.
Pisses herself on the ice. That was hard to watch.
That was very hard to watch. That movie was kind of really hard to watch.
Remember your involuntary oh shit moment with the wire?
Oh, man. Okay, so here's a little story. We're getting a little... I don't know if we would get meta here, but here's a story of our interaction at the movie theater. So, spoilers if you haven't seen Antonia, but I'm sure we should have given a spoiler alert a long time ago.
Put that in the description.
So, here we go. In the movie, it was towards, like, when it was climaxing like
right
up.
Before the court case.
It was right before the climax.
And her mother showed up.
Mind you, her mother was... terrible person. Like, you had no idea, no reason why the mom would show up. Mm-hmm. And when the mom showed up, I kind of had this idea. She's got to be up to something. There's no way she would visit Tanya just out of the goodness of her heart.
And that's what I thought. But then they started talking like, oh my God, they're going to have...
I thought it was going to be a resolution.
I thought I was going to cry.
I thought the movie was going to pull that stuff again.
But no.
No. No. So, the movie was going there... and it just rips out all the happiness.
She reaches into her pocket and they put the camera on it and... And once you realize it's a wire.
And the funny thing is, they did a show, not tell. She puts her hand in there,
yep.
And you heard a click. And that was the involuntary, oh shit.
It was like the music stopped, click, and then all you heard in the theater was, oh shit.
That was courtesy of
me. And like everyone turned around.
Yeah, people in the first front rows turned around and looked right at me. And the involuntary, oh shit. That was probably a loud oh shit. That's it. That was like at least a 7 on a scale.
Yeah, that was a 7 on the oh shit scale.
It was silent in that movie when it happened.
Oh, yeah, because the music stopped.
Everything stopped in that movie. All the audio stopped. You heard. I don't remember how Tanya figured it out. I think she heard the click or she felt something when she hugged her mom.
I think she heard the click.
She very well might have.
Click. Oh shit! And then. Let me see what's in your pocket.
Yeah, and then she just ripped out that. It wasn't as much a wire as it was just a tape recorder in her pocket. Oh my God, that was a harrowing scene. And she just kicks her out.
She just throws her out.
Well, not just that. She starts fishing for the answer. So like, even if you somehow missed that part of that's part of that scene, you kind of got
she pulls it out.
No. She starts fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The mom starts fishing for answers.
Yeah.
Before, you know, like a little bit before.
But they make it seem like genuine to the point it does, you know, pull the fucking ringer for you.
Yeah. And what pulls the carpet, like, the movie, they have such a genuine connection in that scene. And the movie just, whoop, rips out that carpet right out from under you.
I think the Zazar is a little, I like it a little more because it made me feel better.
Yeah, well...
But they were both just genuinely
They're both really good films.
We talk about movies a lot.
We do. But this is just because what we've seen regularly. You know, just we've seen recently.
I guess
recently.
We could probably make this one about because there was another two that we didn't like so much.
Well, I don't know if we didn't like... Did you like Winchester?
Oh, jump scare the movie? Cliche the movie?
Okay, well...
Cool set the movie.
A great
decent graphics. Acting the movie?
Good acting, great. It was a great twist.
It was very meh for me.
Well, I guess...
It was okay.
I guess I'm a little bit more biased, or I guess I skew more towards liking that movie just because I was so interested in that story. Yeah. I guess I'm kind of a sucker for, like...
See, I thought you would have been angry at it because it just kind of botched... I thought it was going to be like a... Like a documentary.
See, that's what I kind of went in there thinking as well. I thought it was going to be a documentary on the woman, the house, the family, and kind of like the hauntings and all that. You know?
But this was the equivalent of going into a World War II documentary and seeing like Godzilla or something.
This was the equivalent of Pearl Harbor, the movie that came out like in 2000.
Ooh, the Michael Bay movie.
Was it Michael Bay?
Oh yeah, it was Michael Bay.
Like, I went to go see a World War II documentary and a chick flick book out.
Yeah.
Yeah, was it Brad Pitt that was in that movie? I think we might be talking about the same movie, because I can't remember any other Pearl Harbor movie.
It is
the one that was filmed here in town?
Yeah, it was Michael Bay.
Okay, so that was Michael Bay? Okay,
wow. And that's one of his better ones.
That's not saying much, but
yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It was like going to see Pearl Harbor, which you would think would be a historically accurate movie, but all of a sudden it's just a chick flick, there's romance, it just strays totally, it goes into a human element, you know? Going back to Winchester, that's exactly what I thought it was going to be, but it was a pleasant surprise.
It wasn't a bad ghost movie.
The only thing is, like, the 5 jump scares, maybe in the first hour of the movie, which totally ruined everything.
And there was
for
that
me.
One that was like right after the other on the stairs. Jump scare. Ten seconds. Jump scare. I was like, Jesus, when are you going to stop?
So if you're familiar at all with the Winchester house, you know that there's a staircase that leads right into the ceiling. And so there was a jump scare where one of the characters hits his head on the ceiling. And it's like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? It jump scares you. It's like kind of like 2 jump scares in
it's
one.
A jump
like
scare a jump sandwich. Scare,
it's like a jump scare and a half. So like it jump scares you, dude hits his head, another jump scare. It's just the music. It just annoyed me. Remember, we almost walked out. Yeah, we almost walked out. I wrote you that note. 3 more jump scares and we're out of here. And we hit 2. And we hit 2 before they stopped. And just before the climax, there was one last jump scare. But we were already 2.
Yeah,
we were already 2 invested in the movie.
Because it got like a kind of a decent ghost movie story going on.
It did. It had a good story without getting too much into spoilers, because this movie came out fairly recently. So without going too much into spoilers, I don't know if this is biased for me really wanting to like this movie, but I would say that it used jump scares as a plot device.
I don't think it needed the jump scares because it really did. Remember when he was walking down the corridors of the hallway?
And you were
and it was scary.
Anticipating, that was very scary. The thrill aspect of it. You don't need
it was like
jump scares. It was like I told you in the theater. The jump scares are the equivalent of a comedian jumping off stage and tickling you and saying, ha ha, I'm funny, I made you laugh.
Yeah, it's the cop. I was like, well, I can't build a scary atmosphere, so let me just, you know.
Just spook the shit out of you.
Yeah. It's there was a movie called The Strangers that kind of got a pretty decent reception, but there weren't very many jump scares in the movie, but there was a lot of shit going on in the background that you really had to, like, you'll see someone kind of inching on the background.
Yeah.
And it'll pan and they'll be gone, and that's what made that movie scary.
See, and that's what I think, Winchester could have done.
Yeah, it could have totally
Winchester
done something
was totally
like
on the nose. If that's kind of like alluding to something, Winchester was just totally on the nose, fist meet nose, right there in the, you know, right there, just punches you. There's no in between, just hits
you. Especially
with
that maze like atmosphere they had, they could have had, you know,
it had the perfect setting for just having you sitting at the edge of your seat and just like uncomfortable looking at the corners of the screen.
Yeah, paying attention, like, you know, you have the main character
walking down a
hallway, looking through something, and then you see some shit going on in the background, pans
exactly.
away, and it's gone.
Exactly, exactly.
And yeah, 1 or 2 jump scares are okay.
Okay, so here's a little bit of I wouldn't call this a spoiler, but when he gets to the house, he's looking at himself in a mirror, and it's turning. and he has to keep checking it, and, you know, moving it back, and you're like, okay, something's coming. Were there any jump scares at that point? I don't think there were. I think
the mirror?
The mirror. I don't think there were any jump scares prior to that. That mirror was the first jump scare.
Yeah.
So,
and it was one of the worst.
It was the worst. That kind of like set the tone. It's like, okay, this is what you're going to do to me, movie. This is what you're doing. The music just hit so loud. It was the specter was on screen for a split second, and it just ruins the mood.
Oh, you're talking about the ghost in the mirror?
Yeah.
I was talking about the mirror that was actually a door, and it was a maid on the other side.
Oh.
But it made you think it was a hand coming.
Oh, God. That was another one. That was another
one. That was my involuntary oh shit moment.
That was like a
12.
That was
I screamed oh shit.
That was up there.
And I dumped popcorn all over the floor. I remember that.
That was up there. See, so like what I would have done, and maybe I'm just different. Maybe this is too cliche. But like you had the rumbling of the drawer, mm-hmm. The main character is walking up to it, and the music, suspense is building as he gets closer, and it's going, the drawer's shaking, the character's shaking, the character doesn't know, he reaches out, everything stops, the door's open, and it's just a maid.
See,
and you have no jump scare, no loud music, no violent camera shake, and it's just the door's open, and the maid's like, hi.
You see, you're right on that, because, see, The Strangers, to this day, I can't watch that movie without just getting a heart attack. Because you know when a jump scare is coming. It's like, I don't know, this is coming. But you can't, that anticipation is something that's, like, almost primal. It feels like, even though you know it's not there, you're sitting there like, oh, okay, this needs to stop.
Yeah.
This needs to stop right now, okay.
But jump scares in a movie, anybody who wants to go into movies, anybody who wants to be a DP, director of photography, anybody who wants to be a creative writer, anybody who wants to do that, if you're going for film, don't do that. Please.
At least not as much. One or two,
it's fine. Let them be plot devices.
Yeah, let them be relevant.
Well, I don't know about having it in the climax, because the climax, that would totally ruin the immersion of the climax.
Yeah.
Have it at the beginning. Have it to set a precedent. Have it to establish maybe a character's paranoia. Have it to do something.
Or, you know, maybe... I remember... I don't know if you ever saw that. I was talking about The Mist. The jump scares in The Mist, they weren't very... I think they were like two. But they were always showcasing new things that you had to fear in The Mist. And right. They weren't really jump scares, but they kind of creeped in. Like, there was a scene where it was a really creepy fucking scene,
mm-hmm.
where they're going out back after the mist, and they have this big garage door, and something's pushing on it, and it's no noise. I'm like, so the guy goes in, tells him, hey, there's something out there. No one believes him. They open the door, and that kid's gonna go outside, and slowly these tendrils creep in and just grab him, and they're trying to pull him back in. It wasn't really a jump scare, but I was like, oh.
Yeah, so there's no music, no violence, and you just saw everything come out. You're like, whoa. Like, it was a natural scare.
Plenty of violence.
I'm talking about the music, like a violent...
Oh, no.
Like,
oh, no, no. It was like... In fact, for a moment, it panned to the bottom where the mist was creeping into the door, and that kid was just standing there looking out, and he stops, and then you just see these silhouettes creeping in. It was... I'm sorry, The Mist is such a good movie.
That sounds like something I need to watch.
It's a great movie.
Well, I guess that brings it into podcast episode -1.
Demo episode 0.
Demo episode. I don't know if this will get posted. If this does get posted and you are listening to this, do let us know what you think. This is obviously a very film-centric podcast.
It's very primitive. This is more like the appetizer.
It's an appetizer. It's a demo, just like a band would do. It's a demo. We're submitting this to labels, you, the listener, and you tell us what you think. You know, this is going to cover eventually more topics, and it's going to be more diverse, and we'll have other stuff to talk about. But this is just getting a feelers out, getting to see how me and JD interact with one another, and mm-hmm. it's just he and I. Because usually, if we're telling stories, it's a group of people.
This conversation would be kind of like if we just got out of a movie.
Exactly. This is exactly the kind of
conversation. We will sit and like talk like this for
through the credits.
Hour. Yeah.
We will sit, and even we'll be in the car. We'll drive and we just talk. Like, this is basically like sitting. Imagine you're in the back seat, and me and JD just went to go see a movie, and we're talking about it. So you just basically saw three movies with us. We were movie jumping. We went to go see I, Tonya. We went to go see Disaster Artist, and we went to go see Winchester.
And a little bit of the mist, and
a little bit of the mist at the end. So, do let us know what you think. Thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, this has been a good job. This has been a great time. I can't wait to do more of these. JD, thanks for having us. Thanks for coming here.
No problem. Thanks for listening to Podcast Sandwich, the tastiest podcast on the internet.
Goodbye. We'll see you next time.